discussing about Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to try to deepen our appreciation for Krishna and the science of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada would use the word science of God, and it of course is not exactly like physics or chemistry, science, but it is theology, or understanding God in an analytical, philosophical way, or by the two processes of theory and practice, which is which is common to the other material science also. So in this regard, we find that the science of understanding Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very satisfying and complete. The age we live in, either you think of it in terms of being Kali Yuga, a huge millennium in which spiritual life will degrade more and more, or even if you just look in terms of Western history for the last few hundred years, faith in God has been diminishing. People used to consider that God was very much part of their daily activities and God was supervising all activities. And now it's very common for people to make no reference to God at all during the day. And even those who may profess a belief in God, as apparently most people do when they're asked that question by polls or something, if you ask them then, what is your idea of God? It's not very well defined. So there are many reasons for this secularization or lack of faith in God. But at least one of them is that the descriptions of God that we get from scripture or from theologians or even devotees is not very satisfying. And one way to look at that deficiency is that God is sometimes described in a one-sided way, and whether one is intellectually aware of it or not, it just isn't very satisfying. I'll give an example of what I mean, and then show you how in Krishna consciousness, everything is the concept of God as Krishna is very complete or always two-sided. An example of one-sided is when God is described as the creator of everything, who is transcendental to this material world. He has nothing to do with this material world. But he's so much apart from it that one cannot relate to him or find him anywhere in this world. Whereas while we may want to, we do want to worship a God who's not just one of us, a common human being, but we want him to be perceivable to us and feel that he is involved in the world also. So that's one example of extremes. In theological language, the extreme of God being apart from the world, that's expressed in the philosophy of deism, that thinks of God as just being some creator. An example even is given, who winds up the creation like you wind up a clock, and then it just, from then on it just runs on completely by itself. He has nothing to do with it. Exactly what he does is not known either. But then the other extreme is wanting to see God only in the world, in the things in the world, and call that God. And that's known as pantheism. So neither of these are very are complete. But in descriptions of Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, we get in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, you get understanding of his being completely transcendental from the material world in his Vaikuntha abode, where no taint of material anxiety reaches him or his pure devotees. And that would have to be a part of the understanding of God. And so we look for a time when we can go to that abode, or we can even think of that abode. But at the same time, Krishna, as the super soul, he's completely present everywhere in the material world, and we're advised how to understand him in that way. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, in some of those verses in the 7th chapter and the 10th chapter, I am the taste in water, I am the light in the moon and the sun, that Krishna is present by his energy in this world, and he's directing the activities, especially for his devotees. There are other understandings of how God is, both aspects of God are present in Krishna. I would like to particularly discuss another one, which is that God is a person, and yet he is inconceivable or beyond what we think of as a person. Again, how those would be incomplete by themselves. If God is not a person, then where is the religion? Where is the worship? We see that impersonalists, they often are so themselves dissatisfied because there's no spiritual nectar in their practice of meditating on Om or nothing, that sometimes they take to material activities, although they declare the material world as false, or in an unauthorized way, they take to reading the personalist literature like Srimad Bhagavatam. This shows that impersonalism by itself, to conceive of deity or God as impersonal, it's only one aspect of the absolute truth. But if you were to consider him as only a person, meaning like you or I or a little bit greater, then why should we worship him as God? But persons who don't have the benefit of this full science of God, they may be striving to understand God, and due to no fault of their own, they find it very, very difficult to understand God. As soon as they hear that he's a person, when they don't hear the whole philosophy, they think, this is anthropomorphism. You just made up a God. Like you imagined a great human being, because they find it difficult to understand spiritual personality and spiritual form. And the old argument that as soon as you say that God has a form, then he must be limited. He's so big, he has a certain shape, then he's not unlimited, he can't be God. These kind of criticisms of personalism are done without having fully heard and understood science of God as in Krishna consciousness. So how God is a person, but he's beyond all defect of personality as we know it, and how he is not mythological or anthropomorphic, that we can get to our full satisfaction in Krishna consciousness, and all your religious aspirations will be satisfied. So these things, this appreciation particularly of Krishna as an attractive person, and as the absolute truth, inconceivable, were very wonderfully expressed in these poems statements by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. After Lord Krishna had demonstrated to Lord Brahma that he was not just a cowherd boy, but he was the source of all the demigods and all time and space. Jai Radha Govinda. The previous pastime was called The Bewildering of Lord Brahma. Just very briefly, Lord Brahma is the demigod in charge of the universe, and while traveling in the universe, during the time when Krishna was present in his pastimes in Vrindavan, he saw Krishna playing in the midst of his cowherd friends. So this is the perfection of God as person, that he is so lovable and intimate and attractive in different rasas with his friends. So he observed particularly the rasa of the friends with Krishna. They're equals with him. And Krishna gets great pleasure out of this. Now here we go beyond theology to the actual rasa of Krishna, where you forget that he's God. Never mind science of God. He is my friend, Krishna. So Lord Brahma was not able to, at that time, appreciate that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing with his friends. He thought that God should be his master, should be engaged in some more majestic activities. So when we speak or when we understand rasa with Krishna, that is such an advanced stage of God understanding that the greatness of God is put aside and you just have loving exchanges. But that can only be reached when, at least in the beginning, you have an understanding of God's greatness. And the Vaishnava scholars, they analyze for us the greatness of God as Krishna. So that when we hear about the rasas of Krishna, we never think he's an ordinary boy or something like that. But Brahma took it that way, and he played these tricks on Krishna, and then Krishna showed his great mystic potency. And then Brahma could understand that he is the Supreme Person. And then they had this face-to-face meeting after Brahma had been thoroughly humiliated. And Krishna then came before Brahma in his small form as the cowherd boy. And Brahma began to pray. Let me offer my respectful, repeated obeisances unto the son of Maharaj Nanda, who is standing before me with conch shell earrings and peacock feather on his head. His face is beautiful. He is wearing a helmet garlanded by forest flowers, and he stands with a morsel of food in his hand. He is decorated with cane and bugle. He carries a buffalo horn and flute. He stands before me with small lotus feet. Now, the Krishna described here is very, very attractive. As a small child is attractive, and not just an ordinary child, but extremely beautiful child. On a few occasions where some great devotee sometimes saw Krishna in Vrindavan, and at first just thought he was a child, nevertheless, they were just overwhelmed at how beautiful the child was. That's Krishna's opulence of beauty. Speaking of analyzing God, the sage Parasya Muni, he's analyzed that God is a person. Vedanti tat tat vavidas tatvam gyanamad bhayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagamaniti sabhyate. He is Bhagavan, he must be a person. In addition to being the impersonal effulgence and to being the Lord in the heart. But considering him as Bhagavan, What kind of a person? He is the person with six opulences to the infinite degree. All strength is in God. All knowledge, wisest person. All fame, all wealth, supreme proprietor. And despite having so many opulences, he's not at all attached to them, renounced, and all beautiful. So Krishna, as a cowherd boy, was appearing very beautiful. However, at the same time, after that recent experience, Brahma understood that he's not just a beautiful person of this material world or of some higher world, whose only opulence is to have this attraction. No. You are very affectionate towards your devotees. In spite of your affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Therefore, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who can understand a little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance and disappearance of the Lord, becomes immediately eligible to enter into the kingdom of God after quitting the material body. So, although we can see very readily the deity of Krishna here in the Mandir, Radha Govinda, or on the cover of the book, who is the boy with, who is the girl with Krishna, who is Krishna? But to actually understand the beauty of Krishna and his inconceivable potencies, that is not easy. Then here we get testimony of realization of a very great advanced person, Brahma, who does realize it to some extent. So this is a very great fortune for us to just hear from such a person. This is the process, of course, to hear from a realized person who has all direct experience. Of course, no one can know Krishna incomplete, but he has advanced amount of direct realization of Krishna. And as difficult as that is, yet it's easy for us to just associate with such a person. That person is rare. That person has attained such a stage after much austerity. And that person has been very much blessed by the Lord. But for us to understand Krishna by associating with him, that's not very hard for us to do. Well, we don't have to do anything but just hear submissively from that person and render service. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with these prayers, testimonies, explanations of great saints and sages, and Krishna himself also speaks. And all we have to do is receive it submissively. And of course that's difficult for us also because of our being very distracted in the world and not having time to hear about Krishna, and because we are also products of this secularized, misguided population. We don't want to hear about Krishna. But this is the process. And Brahma explains that too. Although he now realizes he was previously greatly mistaken also. And so he's expert guide for us. He says, one has to hear from a devotee without speculation. You have given statements in the Bhagavad Gita and many similar Vedic literatures. One does not even need to change his worldly position. He simply has to hear your message. That means that's a very big benediction there. A dispensation. You don't have to, in order to attain this state of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even give up your job You don't have to live in a special place for meditation. You can live in New York City. You can be a householder, whatever. But you have to hear with faith from the authorized literature or person. Give up your speculation, and then you can, and only then can you realize. Although you are not understandable by the material senses, simply by hearing about you, one can gradually conquer the nations of misunderstanding. And what is this? What happens that you can understand by hearing? The thing is that Krishna, he gives you the grace to understand him. In other words, it's not exactly, it is by your hearing, but by that hearing, this is your sacrifice or your austerity, little as it is, to hear with attention and with devotion. It's a service to Krishna to hear about him. And when he sees that you want to hear about him, and whatever you do hear, you start to appreciate it, and you start to follow the instructions of Krishna to hear more regularly and to chant his holy name, then by doing that, you please Krishna, and then he appears in those activities. Although those activities are absolute, hearing from the Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna mantra, we also know that there are different degrees of doing it. Like, there's an offensive way to practice it. That's to practice it and not be serious about it, to break all the basic rules and regulations of spiritual life, or to do it with distracted mind. That's called offensive chanting or offensive hearing. So that means Krishna isn't completely pleased by your doing that. But when you do it rightly, then he's pleased and he fully appears in the alphabets or the letters of the holy name. He fully appears in the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam that you're hearing. Otherwise, although there's always benefit, it doesn't work. Otherwise, why? There are so many lectures given in Krishna consciousness in different places, and sometimes people, they can't even remember that they heard the lecture or like that. So there's a quality to performing this jagya. Devotional service. Devotional service is so important that even a little attempt can raise one to the highest perfectional platform. One should not therefore neglect this auspicious process of devotional service and take to the speculative method. By the speculative method, then he goes on to say that you can learn certain things like the scientists or philosophers, but God cannot be known. He can only be revealed when you please him by taking to the authorized process of devotional service, starting with chanting and hearing. Brahma goes on to glorify this process and points out that it's the only way to know. And at one point he explains it like this. He says, "One who has attained a little devotional service can understand your glories. Even one striving for Brahman realization or Paramatma realization cannot understand the different features of your personality unless he treads the devotional path. One may be the spiritual master of many impersonalists, or he may go to the forest or to a cave or mountain and meditate as a hermit for many, many years, but he cannot understand your glories without being favored by a slight degree of devotional service. Brahman realization or Paramatma realization are also not possible, even after one searches for many, many years, unless one is touched by the wonderful effect of devotional service." So this is a secret, rahasyam hetad uttamam, the secret that of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna refers to. One cannot understand Bhagavad Gita by just approaching it academically, just as you can't taste the honey by licking the outer bottle. So devotional service means Krishna being pleased with you and then revealing himself to you. So if we will read these books of Prabhupada, we'll get the understanding and the encouragement to want to serve Krishna and hear about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna wants to reveal himself to us. He wants us to come back to Godhead. But he has to see that we are ourselves wanting a little bit also. And then he gives us. He's so kind and lenient, and he honors our free will, so that if you're not desirous at all of understanding Krishna, then he won't reveal himself to you. He'll let you know the things that you're actually thinking about, how to make some material advancement in one way or another. But when he sees that you're sincere, only then he'll reveal himself to you. So I'm saving some time here if there are some questions for discussion. Charama. It's basically the same. Then we might say, well, then why have lectures? We have the best lecturer. Let's just play his tapes. One reason is that Prabhupada wanted his disciples to speak, so it was for them. Even in his presence, he would do that. Maybe the other disciples would get restless, and Prabhupada would ask one of them to get up and speak. To train us. And of course we do listen to his lectures and we do read perhaps most of the time, but straight from him. But we also want to hear, we should want to hear from other devotees what they've realized from Prabhupada in disciplic succession. And that has its own special advantage also. So the real answer to the question is, no, there's no basic difference between hearing the lecture of Prabhupada or reading the book and hearing one of his followers repeat it and express it in his own words. There's one editorial meeting we had with Prabhupada in 1969 about Back to Godhead. As you know, Back to Godhead, as he conceived it, would have an essay by him, and then the other his disciples would write. So he was explaining how the etiquette was his essay should go first. If we had an essay by his Guru Maharaj, that would go first. And then after that, other disciples. And then he said, something to the effect that actually, he said, it is all my speaking. Your speaking also is my speaking. But we just divide it up. And it appears as different names. But it all comes from him. So if it's done faithfully, it's the same. I'm not sure if it is. So look at it again. But it's a, as it's described, just as with our, in the case of Arjuna, we know that it was Yogamaya for the intimate friend of Krishna to be in such bewilderment that he was in the bodily consciousness. And yet, it appeared as Mahamaya. He appeared to be under the influence of Maya. So that Maya, which separates us from knowledge of Krishna, so in this case, Lord Brahma, he was also bewildered, not in the sense of having an intimate rasa with Krishna in the sense of the boys were having, but he had doubt how Krishna could be the supreme, and he wanted to see him do something more. Therefore, it's called the bewildering of Brahma and the humiliation of Brahma. Yeah. That's Prabhupada's contribution. Yeah, I just looked at one. He says, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, simply by understanding your constitutional position, your teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, and sometimes Krishna even says, as I said in the Bhagavad Gita, in some cases it appears that as a young boy, Krishna didn't speak the Bhagavad Gita until he was 125 years old on this planet. So as a young boy, how could he say, I spoke the Bhagavad Gita? Or Lord Brahma say that? But we know that Krishna is eternal. He keeps appearing in different times in history. So in this incarnation, he may be a young boy, but in the previous incarnation, the Bhagavad Gita was already existing. So you may not find that exactly in the verses of the 10th canto. But Prabhupada said, therefore he calls these summary studies. Yeah, a summary study. He says, summary study means I can do what I want. So the rasa is not wrong that Krishna should say, as I said in the Bhagavad Gita, or that the child, Brahma should say to the child, you spoke in the Bhagavad Gita. And that Prabhupada is not inventing something contrary to the truth of Krishna consciousness. But he's adding, and we relish that addition. So the acharyas, they sometimes do that. We should just understand that he was in Maya for the time being so that Krishna could do these wonderful pastimes. It may be more meaningful to the worshippers of Lord Brahma. And I can't remember where I've heard it, but I've heard that some of the Madhva teachers who follow Lord Brahma, they don't like so much to discuss this bewildering of Lord Brahma, because it so much describes Lord Brahma in Maya. But there it is. His pastime. But it's so glorious for Lord Brahma also that he then speaks one of the most glorious parts of the Bhagavatam, these prayers. It's certainly one of the most philosophical with emphasis on personalism. That's why I chose it. I said it because it shows the complete or two-sided description of God as a lovable, intimate person, but to be understood as inconceivably the absolute. So these realizations, full of bhakti and full of philosophy, come from the mouth of Lord Brahma after he was humiliated. And what was his humiliation? Just to be shown that he's a tiny creature and that God is infinitely great and that he made the mistake of thinking he was great. And maybe that he could pull a trick on God. So it's all to Brahma's glorification also. Because then he praises Krishna so nicely and praises Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan. It's very wonderful, even from the point point of Lord Brahma's activities. And then after he finished the prayers, although they were very wonderful, Lord Krishna wasn't that impressed. And said that he displayed his gravity of not showing Brahma whether he was impressed or not. Although he was just a little boy. And then Brahma could understand that he really didn't belong in the Vrindavan pastimes. So he asked, please, Lord, let me depart so that you can go on with your pastimes without disturbance of somebody like me around. And I'll go back to my service to you. And I hope that in the future birth, I could be born in the Vrindavan pastimes, just maybe as a grass on the ground, not in Vrindavan, but on the edge of Vrindavan, so that the gopis and other great devotees, when they're coming and going in your pastimes, they might step on my head. So this is also very wonderful devotional humility of Brahmaji. It's not a discredit, but it's a credit of Krishna, Krishna's devotee. Kirtan in about 10 minutes. You have a question? There's also that phrase, explaining is more important than reading. That would refer, I think, particularly to, say, just having the verses rather than the explanations. Prabhupada's explanations, even though they're in written form, they're different than just reading their explanation. But it also means reading even the purports and explaining them with reference to his other teachings. But your point is, there's a statement that what? A book learning is not sufficient? Yeah, there's a statement that book learning is theoretical and a deity worship is a practical way. So we hear that Krishna has six qualities in infinite degree, and that he comes into the material world sometimes. So we're hearing it, hearing about Krishna, or we're hearing you should serve Krishna. So then, to actually, with our body, with our senses, to actively render service to Krishna by bowing down, offering food to Krishna, and doing other kinds of devotional service. That is mentioned as another kind of service or practical service to complement the hearing. So although I was stressing that the importance of chanting and hearing as service itself, not as a theoretical thing, but the outcome of that hearing should be to want to render other services. That's the dasya, or servitude, means activity, that upon hearing about Krishna and how great he is and the importance of devotional service, then you don't just meditate on devotional service, but you try to do something. Bring a flower to Krishna, bow down to Krishna, or distribute his teachings, the books, give them to others, offer the food to Krishna. So many things that you can do with your senses. That kind of cultivation makes it non-theoretical. But it couldn't be done unless you were hearing also. Yes, sir. The number of what devotees is deep? Is that a fact? The number of dedicated devotees is decreasing? You have to, that's a very statistical statement. You have to prove that. that around the world, on this planet, first who are dedicated and then are they actually decreasing? That's a little bit like the statement that they say that the certain species of life have become extinct. They don't exist anymore. But we understand that the species, they don't become extinct. They may move off this planet. Just like certain species may not be seen in one part of the country, they may go somewhere else. So similarly, species of life, if they don't appear on this planet, it doesn't mean that they're extinct. So overall, whether the number of dedicated devotees is decreasing, may or may not be. But you could try not to avoid your question. If we say rather that, why is it that so many dedicated devotees leave their practices? You can answer like that, although the overall effect may not be that they're decreasing, because as some are leaving, others are coming. But the path of devotional service is like a razor's edge. So even if we're practicing and we are dedicated for some time, we can slacken our intensity of service and become a victim again of material desires. That can always happen, just by inattention to the practices of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, when we see that happen, we have to try in our own life to recover our dedication to what it was, and then increase it more, or let it be a lesson to us when we see it in others, to try to be very attentive to devotional life. But it's not a puzzle, and it's not a reflection on. It may be a reflection on the mismanagement or. Of the Krishna consciousness movement by its leaders and that kind of thing, but it's not a statement of the ineffectualness of bhakti yoga. So that's what it may be and what it's not. But still, each of us is responsible for our own progress, and we can't say that the opportunity isn't there, despite the different misfortunes that may have happened in our life, to pick up our devotional service more and more. But it's no wonder that when you declare war on Maya, sooner or later she may get you and you'll be finished for your lifetime as much as you can do. Prabhupada would quote his spiritual master saying, in the war some soldiers will fall. So it's not easy, and we fall and we have to pick ourselves up again. A little bit like your question, the total number of devotees dedicated is decreasing. There was a person asked Prabhupada in a lecture, how many pure devotees are there? A little bit behind these questions is maybe some kind of doubt being expressed in the process itself. In other words, if it's so good, why aren't there more? So Prabhupada detected it in that question. He said, how many pure devotees are there? And Prabhupada said, first he said, not many. Then he said, well, there are many, but not many. And then he said what he really wanted to say. He said, why are you asking that question anyway? He said, when you go to buy your airline's ticket for the city, you don't ask, how many others today bought tickets? He said, you just buy your ticket and get on the plane and go. Never mind how many they sold. So your first concern should be that by buying this, can I go there? And then the answer is unequivocal, yes, you can do it. Whether the total number is diminishing or increasing, that we'll find out by statistics and tell you. But you... More important is, if you do it, you can be successful. All right. Let's get ready for kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.